Where do you go for the latest in the Middle East and for insights into the Jewish community and Jewish interpretation of the scriptures? Well, right here, of course.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I'm back home. Thrilled to be back in my home studio right outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, as we spend this thoroughly Jewish Thursday together. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us today. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. When it comes to Israel, when it comes to the Jewish people, when it comes to the Middle East, there's never a dull moment. But as we do with the rest of what's happening in the world, the rest of what's happening in the church, we also seek to be a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity when it comes to the Middle East, when it comes to the Jewish people. So, ready to take your questions, any Jewish-related question of any kind. If you're a Jewish person, you don't believe in Jesus, Yeshua, as the Messiah. If you're a Christian, wondering about Jewish custom or tradition, wondering about issues in the Middle East, today is the day to call. 866-348-7884. And I have a question for you. Are you ready for my question? So you can call in with your question for me, or you can call in with your answer to my question. There you go. Give and take. Here's my question to you. Do you believe that within the next 5 years, Israel will be in the midst of an all-out war for survival? I don't mean just another skirmish, another conflict, as there was, say, Operation Cast Lead when Israel went in to take out the terrorist bases in Hamas-controlled Gaza, or the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in the 90s that, of course, was so controversial and got all kinds of negative press and world attack against Israel. And anything new with that? No. But I'm talking about an all-out war for survival as happened in 1948 when the state was birthed. Do you believe... just asking for your beliefs, either based on what's happening politically or your understanding of biblical prophecy or both, or just some sense you have. Do you believe that within the next 5 years, Israel will be in an all-out war for survival? Just curious as to what your opinion, your take is on that. 866-34-TRUTH. You're welcome to call in as someone who believes the Bible or someone who doesn't. I'm simply curious to get your take. Now, a bunch of things I want to talk to you about the Middle East, some interesting updates from the Orthodox Jewish community, some spiritual insights I want to share with you as well. But if you haven't followed this, just hot off the press, basically, David Brickner, who is the leader of Jews for Jesus and a personal friend of mine, David Brickner is in the midst of a dialogue debate with Pastor John Piper over Israel and the land. Do the Jewish people have a right to the land? Are there promises, physical national promises, that remain for the Jewish people pertaining to the land? We are scheduled to have David Brickner on the air with us 1 week from today to discuss these issues. And Matt, why don't you see if we can track down John Piper and see if he will have time to join us, either with David Brickner or at a separate time. 866-34-TRUTH, though, for your answer to my question. Do you believe that there will be all-out war, that Israel will be in an all-out war for survival within the next 5 years? Yes or no? You may have a reason for sharing your particular opinion with us. If you've not been following what has been happening in the Middle East in recent days, there's turmoil in Egypt, there's ongoing turmoil in Syria. So you're talking to the south of Israel, to the north of Israel, then to the east of Israel with Iran. The plot continues to thicken with Iran. And then the immediate neighbor, Gaza, Hamas rockets, various projectiles coming in, attacking Jewish people. What will the Israeli response be? We'll talk about that. Take your calls. Whole lot going on today on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on The Line of Fire.
Yeah.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm looking at our board here, and there's a call that's intriguing me. Alex, I want to get to your call in a moment. Very curious about your question, what you have to say here. But my question for all of you, and when I said you may want to share your perspective or not, because you may have biblical thoughts on it, you may have political thoughts on it, you may just have a feeling. So I'm just looking for yes or no. Do you believe that Israel will be in an all-out war for survival within the next 5 years? 866-34-TRUTH. Now, here's what's happening more broadly, in case you have not been following things in Israel and Middle East for the last few weeks or days. I had written last year that the Arab Spring was going to be an Islamic jihadist fall, that it was clear that radical Islam stood the most opportunity, had the most opportunity to have major gains, political gains, in all the conflict and crisis going on in the Middle East, even though there were some crying for democracy. Even the democracy movement, to them, many of them, that still meant Sharia law, but just get rid of the bad dictators, these oppressive dictators. Well, in Egypt, the vote has gone the way of the Islamic Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood, which has radical Islamic roots and which clearly would want to break the peace treaty with Israel, as tenuous as that has been through the years, would clearly make things worse for Israel. In the midst of all that, the military has taken on increasing power, and will there simply be a military coup? So, you know, listen, whatever issues there were with Hosni Mubarak, I don't know the level of corruption. I simply know that it's common to have corrupt dictatorship in the Islamic world. And, you know, you get human beings in power, there's a lot of corruption, and it's very common in the Islamic world. You don't have a democratic mindset there. Well, do you think it was just with Mubarak? Do you think there aren't power-hungry people in the military? So that remains very tenuous. And then within Egypt, you have the Coptic Christians, who are a distinct minority but have a long history there and have suffered persecution, but many centuries or number of centuries have coexisted more peacefully, have not been under constant attack. They may be second-class citizens in certain ways, but they've not been under the physical attack that they have been since the Mubarak government was overthrown. So that remains something we need to pray for God's grace and protection on the Coptic Christians within Egypt, and for the gospel, a true message of the gospel, to go forth throughout the land. In Syria, you now have the question of China working with Syria, of Russia working with Syria, of how much the United States will get involved. Again, just imagine that Israel was committing atrocities against its own citizens on the level that Syria was committing against its citizens. Oh, I know some of you radical Israel bashers will tell me they do that all the time. Let's get the documentation out, okay? One-tenth of what Syria's done, 1/100th of what Syria has done, would bring international condemnation, crushing down on Israel's head. Syria is fighting against the uprising to get rid of Bashar Assad. It is violent. It is torture. It's what we've known Syria to be and to do for decades. This has been well-known and documented. What's going to happen there? Another volatile situation. And then, is there any purpose in the nuclear treaty talks with Iran and the so-called peace talks over the nuclear proliferation? Is it going to be all-out war there? That remains a volatile situation. And remember, even if Ahmadinejad decides to step down, as he says he's going to next year, and he's less and less popular, remember, he's not the driving force there. It's Ayatollah Khamenei and these other radical Islamic clerics. In the midst of all that, God is moving. I heard from other folks yesterday that have been involved in Iran, the same report I have heard for several years now, that there is an extraordinary work of the Spirit behind the scenes in Iran. And multiplied thousands of Muslims are coming to faith, are being sovereignly visited by the Lord, are having their eyes open, are becoming believers in Jesus. We hear about a case here and there, a pastor who's on death row in Iran because he refuses to renounce his faith in Jesus. There's international attention on those very important situations, which should have our attention. But behind the scenes, underground, there is an upswell of Muslims, Iranian Muslims, coming to faith in Jesus, because of which there, who knows the level of upheaval as these believers start to come out of the closet? And who knows, many that are following Islam outwardly, but hate radical Islam and are simply doing it because they have to. I mean, it's well known that you'll have some of the women covered from head to toe in the required Islamic garb, and then they'll go into houses and they'll just party there because they can do it safely. What happens when gospel liberty comes to people who've been wanting to throw off the shackles of radical Islam? You say, how do you pray? Lord, your kingdom come, your will be done in Iran. Your kingdom come, your will be done in Egypt. Your kingdom come, your will be done in Syria, in Israel. If you have specific insights as to how to pray and specific things to pray for, even based on information that I've shared with you, wonderful. But general prayers to the God that controls the universe, general prayers to God are then interpreted with wisdom by him as to how to act in given situations. 866-34-TRUTH. All right. Let me go to the phones now. Your questions to me about anything Jewish-related are always welcome on Thursdays. But, in particular, I'm curious to know your answer to the question, do you expect there to be all-out war, Israel in an all-out war for survival in the next 5 years? 866-348-7884. We'll start with Alex in Riverhead. Tip of Long Island. Well, not in the tip, but way out of Long Island. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
No problem. How are you doing today?
I'm blessed. Thank you.
Good. I just want to let you know that I listen to your show pretty much daily, and I agree with a lot of stuff you say, except for our topic today.
Well, great. Tell me why.
Well, without taking too much of your time, because I know you're going to have lots of callers, but I don't see how Old Covenant Israel and Israel today has any bearing on any prophecy, period, because it goes completely against what the Testament teaches. Paul said to cast out the bondwoman and her son, and the bondwoman represents Old Covenant Israel, and the son represents the people of Israel, for they will have no part in the inheritance. So how does Israel of today, non-being as a nation, have any bearing on anything of the Bible?
All right, first question for you. As Paul is giving a homiletical interpretation there in Galatians 4, what's that passage referring to? That passage is referring to Abraham and Ishmael, correct?
Correct.
Right, Hagar and Ishmael. Okay, after that event, did God give literal promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and did he keep those promises?
Yes, he did. He kept all his promises.
Okay, so how could Paul be referring to something that happened before those promises to nullify the promises that came afterwards? Didn't Paul himself say just a few verses earlier that the law, which came after the promises, cannot invalidate the promises?
Who said the promises weren't given?
Okay, what are some of the promises? What are some of the promises that that the land will be given to Israel for 1,000 generations. That's one of the promises. That Israel will welcome back its Messiah to that land, and the Messiah will rule and reign from a glorified Jerusalem with his Jewish people saved.
You're taking it literally. The land, according to Hebrews, that Abraham looked forward to was not physical dirt. It was a heavenly Jerusalem.
All right, so hang on. So then the New Testament is false then. In other words, if the New Testament rewrites... No, here's what you have to do, Alex. If someone comes along, right? Let's say someone comes along with a Third Testament now, and they are the new anointed Savior and miracle worker, and now they invalidate everything in the New Testament because you're taking it literally. When Jesus said no one knows the day or the time, or when it says he rose from the dead, you're taking that literally. When it says that his words will never pass away, you're taking that literally. when he talked about a church for every nation. You're taking that literally. You have to throw that out because the new anointed teacher is coming.
I don't have to throw it out. I interpret it according to context, according to Hebrew thought process.
No. Okay, so Hebrew thought process says that a literal promise given to a literal people about a literal land is not real, that when God says he will scatter those people and regather them, he literally scattered them, but he literally...
He will regather them.
Oh, okay.
He did.
So,
so
hang on. The physical regathering that is prophesied throughout the prophets that will be glorious with the Jewish people as a nation worshiping the God of Israel and universal peace on the earth, that has already happened?
Yes.
All right. You disqualified yourself. What you've done is said, I don't believe the Bible. That's what you said. I don't believe the Bible. I make it up as I go along. That's what you said.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, now I left Alex on hold, and then we went back to see if he was still there so he could respond, but he's not. Perhaps he thought that I was ending the call right then. So, Alex, I hope you're still listening. But I take massive exception to your looking at Scripture. And you live on Long Island, you're a New Yorker, we can talk straight with each other, all right? To say you're going to quote Paul and take Paul literally, to say you're going to quote some other verse from the New Testament, from Hebrews, and take that literally, then when I give you verses from the Hebrew Scriptures, those have no meaning because everything's going to get twisted. It's going to become spiritualized, so it no longer has any meaning. I might as well say I'm taking a call from Alex in Riverhead and instead talk to Ted in Boston. Just switch it. You see, Deuteronomy 13, God warned the Jewish people about false prophets. And he said, if someone comes along and claims to be a prophet or a miracle worker, and the words they say come to pass or the miracle happens, then they say, follow other gods that neither you nor your fathers have known, and forget about the words of the Torah, then it doesn't matter what miracles they work, the person's a false prophet. So if Jesus comes along, and no matter what miracles he works, even if he rises from the dead, theoretically, if he says, hey, follow other gods, or if he now invalidates the things that God had previously said to Israel, as if they have no meaning, then you disqualify him. You see, the covenant, the words that validate the words of Jesus and Paul, right? What we call the Old Testament today. Now the New Testament comes. If the New Testament now uses the authority given to it by the Old to invalidate what came before it, then you realize it's not true. Now, we recognize that Jesus, Yeshua, came and said he didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill. And in fulfilling it, for example, the blood sacrifices, he took the place of the blood sacrifices. He fulfilled the imagery of the innocent victim suffering for the guilty party. He fulfilled the imagery of what the high priest would do by being the great high priest. So he does not nullify, he does not abolish, or say Sabbath, he takes that to a higher meaning. But if what God promised Israel is now null and void, if the later promise undoes the first promise, then you know there's something questioned about the later. So is Paul explicit or is he not when he says in Romans, the 11th chapter, lest this would be misunderstood, Romans, the 11th chapter, verse 11, did they, the Jewish people, the nation of Israel, did they stumble in order that they might fall? By no means. Rather, through their trespass, salvation has come to the Gentiles so as to make Israel jealous. Israel still remains an entity in God's sight. Why? Because there are promises that remain to them. And that's why when he concludes in Romans 11, 26, says, in this way all Israel will be saved, as it is written, the deliverer will come from Zion. He will banish ungodliness from Jacob. Maybe I'll come back to that passage later. This is my covenant with them when I take away their sins. See, the covenant, he's made a covenant. He doesn't break his word. If he broke his word to Israel, then we can question whether he'll keep his word to the church. Paul writes this, as regards the gospel, they, who? The Jewish people who are rejecting the gospel, the nation of Israel that is rejecting the gospel, as regards the gospel, they are enemies of God for your sake. As regards election, they are beloved for the sake of the forefathers. Even if they're enemies of the gospel or enemies of God for your sake, in opposing the message of Jesus, they are beloved for the sake of the forefathers, the promises God gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That makes God a racist? No, no, no. That makes God a covenant-keeping God. It's about God being true to his word. Can we really trust what he says? Or is he fickle? Does he say one thing and mean another? Does he make one promise and then switch it? No. Verse 29, Romans 11, for the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable. For just as you were at one time disobedient to God, but have now received mercy because of their disobedience, so they too have now been disobedient in order that by the mercy shown to you, they may also now receive mercy. For God has consigned all to disobedience that he may have mercy on all. That's the heart of God. That's the promise of God. Hey, Alex, if you haven't read my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, it's a great place to start. Written in 92, more relevant today than when it came out. But thank you for listening. Thank you for expressing your differences, as I have expressed plainly with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, quickly to my question. Do you believe that Israel will be in an all-out war of survival within the next 5 years? Let's grab a couple of calls. Lena in Boston, Massachusetts, what's your take on this?
Yes, hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. I do think that there will be some type of war in Israel within the next 5 years, and solely because of Ahmadinejad in Iran. And I think that there's just so much hatred for the people of Israel that it's just consumed him. And mm-hmm. I do understand that he's claiming that he's going to leave his office in
2013
sometime.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but I think that their regime has been so sneaky and just they've just been lying.
Right. So you believe that do you believe that they have some type of end time theology or complex that they are supposed to fulfill some Islamic calling to wipe out Israel, or this is going to help bring in the end of the age? Do you think that's part of their thinking?
I think it is because, and I'm not 100% I'm not a scholar on their religion or their beliefs, but I thought there was at one point when he says if he destroys Israel that they'll bring in their
ultimate redeemer, their Mahdi.
There is
talk about that. Hey, Lena, we've got a break here, but I'm sure you share the sentiments of many that Iran is fueled by radical Islam and Israel hatred, because of which, as soon as they have full nuclear capabilities, they'll want to declare all-out war on Israel, which then puts Israel in war of survival, or Israel will try to preempt that. I want to hear your take on that. We'll take plenty more calls in the next hour and a half, actually. Hey, the lecture I did, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? The University of South Florida will soon have it available for you on DVD, but you can watch it on YouTube. You can watch it on YouTube over an hour long, plus Q&A after it. So just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire, and we put the link up for today's show in the comments section, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire. You'll find it in the comments section for today. You know, we get so many emails, so many questions from people trying to discern God's will, God's voice. How do I know what he's speaking? How do I know what's the Lord saying? How can I discern it? What should I do? How do I follow the scriptures and work it out? Some of the best teaching, really the best I ever did on this, 12 hours of teaching on how to be led by the Spirit. It's a whole course, $10 postage paid on one CD. It's practically giving it away, but you'll find it very, very helpful. $10 postage paid on one CD to listen to on your computer or your MP3 player. Call right now to order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. You will be blessed and helped by this resource.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire today. Thursday, thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I think I've mentioned that when I've done meet and greet events in different cities and asked folks, okay, so what are our topics? What do we do on each day? Monday's musings, most people don't remember that. That's because it's random. In other words, Monday, you never really know which way the wind blows, what's on my heart, what I want to talk about, what's happened in the news, scriptural issues on my heart. So you never really know what we're going to talk about on a Monday. Tuesday's a teaching day. Tuesday's a teaching day. So theology, Bible, apologetics, practical living. Wednesday, the world. That's right. Wednesday, the world. Moral, cultural issues. Thursday, thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And Friday, we don't have a rhyme for that or an alliteration, but you've got questions, we've got answers. What I find is that the great majority of the people remember the Thursday, thoroughly Jewish Thursday, which was a name that one of our listeners suggested to work with the Thursday, thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And then they remember Friday, you've got questions, we've got answers. Okay, can I share some good news with you? And then my question to you, 866-34-TRUTH, do you believe there will be all-out war in Israel? Do you believe there will be all-out war in Israel in the next 5 years? All-out war for survival, 866-348-7884. Before I take more of your calls, can I share some good news with you? Some really cool news. Are you ready for this? Now, you have to understand, when I share some cool news, it's not always what you would consider cool news. But do you know I'm getting attacked now in the Muslim community? Yeah, you knew it happened at a certain point. But sure enough, a friend of mine that reaches out to Muslims sent me this link. It's to a website, the Muslim Debate Initiative. And there's an article, A Crucial Difference Between How Muslim and Extremist Evangelical Christian Communities Deal with Their Terrorists and Preachers of Hate. Now, I was not aware that mainstream evangelicals were extremist evangelicals. I was not aware that evangelicals that stood with Israel were extremist evangelicals. However, I'm not surprised from a Muslim perspective to see that. But I was certainly not aware that we had terrorists. How many evangelical terrorists are you aware of? And anyway, it's only in the comments section. But, well, no, I guess the main article. Instead of hunting down material supporters of Israel, they praise them and hold them in high regard as apologists, such as William Lane Craig, Dr. Michael Brown, etc., and professors at prestigious universities, such as Dr. Richard Samples, who teaches at Biola University. Instead of refuting extremists who support Israel, they make effort in refuting those Christian evangelicals who oppose Zionism by trying to show how the Bible actually teaches that one should be a Zionist. Perish the thought that I, yours truly, Michael Brown, would be guilty of teaching people to stand with Israel based on the Bible. The thought of it. Yeah, I'm being sorry. Yes, I'm being sarcastic. Correct. I am being sarcastic. So somebody weighs in, Bassam, are you saying these men are Zionists? And then ask the question, and here's the response. This is cool. Are you ready? Needing to prove that Michael Brown is a Zionist is like proving that you eat cereal with milk. It's something too well known to anyone who regularly listens to Brown. Bassam, do you regularly listen to me? If so, would you be willing to call in and share your differences with me? I promise to give you a hearing. I promise not to be nasty with you. I promise not to interrupt you. As long as you realize our time frames and what we're dealing with, I promise to allow you to state your views and to tell me about the extremism that I'm guilty of and tell me about the inequities that I'm guilty of supporting and tell me about how I'm misusing the Bible. Would you do that? If you listen regularly to the show or just happen to get this, and any of you are friends with the folks there, or Matt, maybe you can contact the folks at Muslim Debate Initiative. That's the debateinitiative.com. And I was honored to be attacked there, to be honest with you. But let's have dialogue. Let's talk about it. All right, back with your calls.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Any Jewish-related questions you have, I'll do my best to get to today. I've got a whole lot of things I want to talk about. I'm going to continue to talk about these the next hour. A reminder that you can watch my lecture at University of South Florida on YouTube. We'll have it all out on a DVD together with the Q&A, which will be a great resource for you, for your congregations, for your home Bible studies, and just for you as an individual. But you can watch it now on YouTube. For the link, go to AskDrBrown.org, click on The Line of Fire, and for today's show, you'll see it. I posted it in the comments section. My question for you, do you believe that there will be all-out war? Israel will be in an all-out war of survival within the next 5 years, and perhaps you have a specific reason for saying that. Back to the phones, 866-348-7884. Fuhal in Fairfax, Virginia, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. My name is Suhail Cassidy. I am a Christian Palestinian born and raised in Kuwait and been in the U.S. for about 30 years now. So I come from a diverse background, and notice I said I'm a Christian first because that's a lot more important than being a Palestinian. It's about him, not about what happens in the physical world.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. My first question was actually going to be about your name, because I wasn't sure I had it correctly. So please tell me your name again, sir.
My first name is Suhail. It's spelled S-U-H-A-I-L.
Oh, okay. No, I'm familiar with that Arabic name, and obviously it was a little tough for our call screener to get. So that was my first question. So forgive me for not getting your name right there. Would you mind giving me your larger perspective coming from the unique background that you have, sir, your larger perspective on Israel being in the land today?
In the interpretation, when you look at the Holy Bible, Old and New Testament, it starts with Genesis and ends with Revelation. God created life. Life is sacred. And for those that don't know the life through Christ are the doomed ones. It's the larger picture. Yes, Israel is crucial, but whenever you're interpreting the Bible, there are two views you look at it. The spiritual interpretation of what God might intend in that, and none of us is smart enough or intelligent enough to understand that. And mm-hmm. The second aspect is what's happening in the physical world, how does it relate, and how does it affect me personally?
Okay.
So having said that, yes, there will be World War III. Yes. Israel will be a major, major, major part of that action. But the conflict is going to extend beyond that. When you look at the world population, today there are about 7.5 billion people alive, right? Mm-hmm. The three monotheistic religions, the ones that believe in God, are Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. But there's also the Chinese and the Orientals and the Hindus and those are major populations. And God loves them just as much as Israel, if not more. Any needy person is who God loves. Any mm-hmm. needy person, regardless where you are. So it's about God creating life, and that life is found through Christ. And then whoever doesn't believe or whatever, for some reason, disagrees, then they're not part of the chosen one for eternity.
Right. Yeah. Certainly, the ultimate question is our relationship with God through Jesus. Exactly. Certainly, Jesus died for Jew and Gentile the exact same way. He died for American and for Arab the exact same way.
Absolutely.
And he desires every human being to be saved and to be with him forever. So absolute harmony with you on that. And that's the ultimate issue. That's the ultimate question. Yep. One more question for you, sir. You grew up in Kuwait, you said,
yes,
and Kuwait is not like Iran, but certainly has deep, long-standing Islamic tradition there.
Absolutely.
What would you
I do speak Arabic and English fluently. I've read the Quran many times and have to study it in school.
All right. So from your perspective, And of course, I can hear the beauty of your Arabic accent through your English as well. I studied classical Arabic for 3 years, which was enough time to get tremendous appreciation for the language. Growing up in that environment, how much freedom was there? Let's say a Muslim became interested in Jesus and wanted to convert to Christianity in a country like Kuwait. How costly would it be for that person?
In any Islamic country, it's his life. In any Islamic country, and that includes the 3 billion Muslims that live on this earth. So from Indonesia to Saudi Arabia to Kuwait, Bahrain, Iraq, Egypt, Tunis, Libya, Algeria, and go on.
All right, then one more question. And of course, I understand these things and want our listeners to hear them from the perspective of someone who was raised in that environment. How is the Quran treated? How is the Quran viewed when you're studying it in school, when it's mandatory reading? How is the Quran viewed by the populace as a whole?
In any Muslim, the Quran to them is just like the Bible to us or like the Torah to the Jews, right? So it's their holy reference. The problem with Islam and one of its fallacies, in my opinion, is how can you introduce a religion that can only be spoken in Arabic and, you know, you expect people to memorize
pray in Arabic, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, in my opinion, that's the fallacy of Islam. Nonetheless, while talking about Islam, if you trace the issue back to Ishmael and Abraham and, yes, God did promise it, but the covenant was with Abraham and his descendants. And the crucial question is Ishmael part of those descendants? And in my opinion, yes, he is. Why? Because God created life. Every single life to him is as important as anybody else. There is no differentiation except the cross and who got cross on it. That's the only exception. When it comes to life, I don't know. I am 52 years young, not old, young, and this issue have been a major factor in my life, in the way I do things. And I'm still, not that I've reached any conclusions and so on, but I'm at peace with what I'm telling you in terms of understanding it.
Got it. Well, I appreciate that, sir. I appreciate the call. By the way, the first weekend of August, I should be in the Fairfax, Virginia area, not far from there, the first weekend of August, doing some church meetings and then a radio rally first weekend or possibly first Monday. So we'll be announcing that. But God bless you, sir. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
There is one last thing I'd like to add to my background.
Okay,
my uncle, Samir, Samir, with the same last name, Kafiti, was the Archbishop of the Anglican Church in Jerusalem and the Middle East.
Really?
Yes, and you can look him up on the internet. Samir, Reverend Samir, Kafiti is the last name.
Fascinating. So, well, thank you for sharing that. Thanks for calling and giving us your perspective. Much appreciated, sir.
Can I share my cell number for anybody that is interested in any free dialogue or based on love and life? And, you know, the only way I might just want to add this.
Normally it's a little dangerous to give out a phone number over the air, but you realize anybody could call people that are great people and people who are not particularly stable. You never know who's going to get a phone number. If you want to give it out, that's your call.
No, not really. I wanted to add just my view on the final Palestinian-Israeli thing. I always try to analyze politically what's happening. And as a Christian, my conclusion to the problem is if they want the land, give them the land, right? Because Christ said, he who slaps you on the right, give him the left. And if you do that, then he's behind you. They want the land, let them have it. It ain't about the physical world here. Eternity is much longer for every single human life.
Got it. I appreciate I've just got to jump in, though, because I've got a break coming up. But thank you for the call. Of course, you know, people would respond, hey, we need a place to live. We're talking about millions of people either way, and we need a place
to
live.
Every single life that was ever created.
Yeah, if all of the people involved were following Jesus and submitted to him, then we would have peace and reconciliation because we would come under the cross and we'd forgive and we'd find ways to live together and work together. So ultimately, what we all have to agree on and put our focus on is being ambassadors of reconciliation, that people will come to know the one true God and Jesus the Messiah, whom he sent. Again, thank you, sir, for the call, and perhaps we can meet up when I'm in Fairfax. You don't get a call like that every day from a gentleman with that particular background and heritage, so I hope you were enlightened by the perspective and the conversation. All right, we'll be back with more of your calls, and yeah, I'm going to share some interesting news, a Palestinian manual basically on how to use terms. Public says this, Israel says this, here are terms we want to use. I think you'll find it interesting.
Of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, check this out. It is common with PR. It is common with public communication to make sure that certain terms are used. And a queer thing happened to America. For example, I document from gay activist websites, don't use this. Don't talk about gay agenda. We're talking about gay rights or gay civil rights. Don't talk about this. Use certain terms. I mean, as basic as say gay, not homosexual, those kinds of things. I understand the purpose behind communication. My only question is it truthful? In other words, if certain words convey certain things that are deemed negative or destructive or harmful and other words or phrases are preferred, fine, as long as they're truthful. That would be my ultimate issue. So official PA terminology guide, which is from the palwatch.org website. You'll find it a fascinating website to visit, palwatch.org. And obviously, there'll be controversy surrounding what they post. So the Israeli term, you refer to Palestinian terror. Palestinian Arab term, resistance. Not terror, it's resistance. Terrorist? No. Resistance member. Suicide bombing operations? No. Martyrdom-seeking operations. Palestinian violence? No, it's not that. It's legitimate resistance. Person who was killed, meaning on the Palestinian side? No, use martyr or shaheed. So whoever's killed in the Palestinian cause is a martyr, shaheed. Reciprocal violence? No, it's resistance response. Now, how about this? Israel's Minister of Defense, the Israeli Minister of Defense, how is he to be referred to? According to Palestinian Arabic terminology, the Israeli Minister of War, The IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, nope. They are the Israeli Occupation Forces. Separation fence? No. It's a racist separation fence or, of course, the wall. Even though the vast majority of it is not a wall, it's a fence. Either way, it's going to be called the wall. And it is the racist separation fence or the racist separation wall. Yeah, just watch in the news. Watch how things are being reported. Watch which terms are used. And that will give you an idea of where the people are coming from who are using those terms. Follow what I'm saying? In other words, okay, I use terms like gay, lesbian, as opposed to saying homosexual only. I have friends that feel it's a capitulation to gay activism to say gay, lesbian. I use terms gay, lesbian because I'm talking to a lot of folks who are in the middle. I'm talking to folks on different sides. I'm trying to reach out to the gay and lesbian community in the midst of our differences and have civil dialogue where we can. And I'm committed to civil dialogue either way, whether there's civility towards me or not. I'm committed to it. And, of course, I'm going to be looked at as this vicious homophobe. Fine, but we'll keep talking. I'll keep reaching out. But I understand that when we talk about, say, marriage, I will not say same-sex marriage. I'll put marriage in quotes, or I'll say so-called same-sex marriage because it's not really marriage. Marriage is the union of a man and a woman. So I won't talk about gay rights in terms of people here. This is a matter of gay rights because I don't believe, for example, that a homosexual man or homosexual woman has the right to marry a person of the same sex. So you'll hear me use certain terms, and I'm very careful in what I say, and you can understand where I'm coming from through those terms. Obvious, right? The same way, if you're listening to news, if you're listening to news and you hear news being reported about Israel, listen to the way it's being reported, because that will often give you an indication where the person's coming from. I was listening to the wife of a well-known Christian leader. I guess she's a well-known Christian leader in her own right. But she was talking about being in Israel and seeing what's happening, and kept talking about the occupation. Okay, so she has bought into the Palestinian arguments, the anti-Israel arguments, the replacement theology arguments, or what's so-called fulfillment theology arguments. Same difference, same end result. When she refers to the occupation, and I can't believe what they're doing with the occupation, how can Christians support the occupation? She has completely given herself away. In fact, she's not trying to hide anything. She's being quite obvious in what she's saying. All right. One more call. Rudy in Houston, Texas, what's your take on an impending war?
Well, I believe Israel is really the antagonistic actor in this conflict in the Middle East, because they are the only nuclear power in the whole Middle East.
Were they the attacker, the aggressor, when they were attacked from all sides in 47, 48? There was no nuclear bombs anyone had then.
Well, they were poised to attack. I mean, we do get the politically correct side of history here in the West.
All right, but hang on. So when there were intifadas launched against them in the 30s by Haj Amin al-Husseini, who became a colleague of Hitler, they were the evil aggressors then?
Well, I'm not familiar with that episode of history.
Oh, really? That's very interesting. Okay, who signed the agreement in 47 for the partition? Who said yes, who said no?
Who said no?
Said yes, we accept the UN partition arrangement? Who said yes and who said no?
Okay, well, of course, the United Nations and United States and
No. I'm talking about Israel and the surrounding Arab nations. Who said yes and the Palestinians? Who said yes and who said no? Who said yes, we accept this arrangement and we will live peacefully with it?
Well, you're probably saying the Palestinian leadership.
The Arab leadership said no, we will wipe out and destroy the Jews. The Israeli leadership said yes, we accept this, let us live in peace side by side. All right, tell you what, Rudy, let's do this. I want you to stay on the line, all right? And if you have an email address, I want to email you a link to a talk that I did on this very question, is Israel an evil occupier? And I request that you take the time to watch it, and then write back, or even though we don't let people call again within a week, call me next week after you do that, right? So Rudy, I'm not going to put you on an email list. I'm not going to use your email for any other purpose, but I want to send you this link, all right? So Andrew's going to get that info from you. And if you don't even want to give out your email address, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, and it's in the comments section for today's show. Watch it. It's just an hour long, all right? And then let's discuss things. Enlightening, isn't it? Very enlightening. Friends, it is so important that we understand the will of God for our own lives, how to walk before the Lord and please Him, how to make godly decisions. Is the Spirit speaking today, still leading, guiding? What does it mean to be led by the Spirit scripturally? I've got really practical teaching. We're virtually giving it away. 12 hours of teaching on one CD for your computer or your MP3 player. And it's $10 postage paid, 12 hours of teaching on how to be led by the Spirit. So take advantage of that. We've only got one more day for this. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and click on the online bookstore. You'll see it as today's special resource. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, Israel is far from perfect as a people, as a nation, but God is absolutely perfect, and it is a matter of God keeping His promises to Israel. As surely as He is God, He will do it. Where do you go for the latest in the Middle East and for insights into the Jewish community and Jewish interpretation of the scriptures? Well, right here, of course.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, my joy to be with you today on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Any Jewish-related questions you have for me, my joy to take them and do my best to answer them on the air today. And my question for you, I posted it the last hour, I posted it on Facebook, I'll pose it again now. Do you personally believe that there will be an all-out war against Israel, or Israel will be in the midst of an all-out war? I'm talking about a war for survival within the next 5 years. What's your opinion, either based on world events or based on biblical prophecy as you understand it, or just based on your own intuitive feelings or your political insights? Just curious to get your take. 866-348-7884. Right at the end of the last hour, I took a call from a gentleman in Houston who said, yes, there will be war, but Israel is the aggressor, and Israel is the evil power and the one that has nuclear capabilities and the only one that does. So it's going to be an all-out war, but it's going to be Israel's fault. Very fascinating when I asked him some specific questions. When I asked him, well, who attacked whom in 47-48 when Israel's nationhood was rebirthed, recognized by the nations of the world? He said, well, Israel was poised to attack. And I said, well, who signed the agreement, the UN partition plan for two-state solution? Who signed that? Did Israel say yes? Did Jewish people say yes? The Arabs say yes? No. What happened was the Arab leadership said no, categorically no. They're going to wipe out the Jewish state. And the Jewish state said yes. Let's live in peace and harmony side by side. Fascinating. Fascinating. Of course, he had no answer to that. I asked him, 1930s, what about the intifadas led by the Mufti of Jerusalem, Palestinian Mufti, Haj Amin al-Husseini, who became a colleague and ally of Hitler? He said he wasn't familiar with that part of history. Now, listen, there are plenty of parts of history I'm not familiar with, right? None of us knows every detail of all history. Even areas we focus on, we keep learning. Nonetheless, his accusations were based on misinformation. His accusations were based on popular narratives that he hears from one side without hearing the other. Oh, check this out. The UN is condemning the fact that there are Arabs facing death for selling land to Jews. The UN, I'm sorry. I completely misread that. Shame on me. UN, as Aaron Klein reports on WorldNet Daily, the UN is silent on the fact that Arabs are facing death for selling land to Jews. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has refused to comment on an epidemic of Palestinians facing the death sentence for selling property to Jews. Yes, this does happen periodically. This does happen from time to time that you hear a report about a Palestinian selling land to Jews and being killed for it. WND, WorldNet Daily, attempted to obtain a comment on the matter over the course of 2 weeks. Martin Nasursky, Ban's press spokesman, said there has been a decision by the Secretary General's executive office not to offer any comment on the issue. WND specifically asked for comment on news media reports that the Palestinian Authority sentenced to death former PA intelligence officer Mohammed Abu Shahala for involvement in a real estate transaction in which an Arab property was sold to Jews in the ancient Jewish community of Hebron. The Hebron Jewish community has attempted to secure international assistance for Shahala's plight. Under the framework of the PA's legal system, selling land to Jews is considered a capital offense. According to reports, Shahala is one of at least 16 Palestinians currently in PA prisons for selling property to Jews. What do you know?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Do you believe that Israel will be in an all-out war for survival within the next 5 years? 866-34-TRUTH. That's not the main subject of the program, but it's a question I'm putting out for your opinion. Just getting feedback, curious to see what you have to say about this. 866-348-7884. Or you can weigh in with many others on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page, ASKDR Brown. ASKDR Brown, one word, on Facebook. Some answers to the question. Becky said yes. That was it, which is great. Yes or no? I mean, many others. Paul said yes. Andrew said no. I mean, we got a bunch of yeses and nos. Bob, I thought Israel was in an all-out war for survival for the past 64 years. Good line, Bob. But if you mean a shooting war, I don't think so. Jeremy, there's no way really to answer that. Israel has been at war on the verge of war since 1948. She's never had a moment of peace. Any war as Israel enters into is a war for her survival. Steve, yep. There are some significant blood red moons over the 2014-2016 period, and they all fall on special Jewish days. Last time this happened was in 1947 and 1968. Interesting. Now, personally, I never look at that. I never think about those things, blood red moons and so on. However, is it possible, in keeping with Genesis 1, that God puts the stars and sun and moon in place as signs and for seasons? Is there a possible message? Can't rule it out, but I personally never look at those things, but interesting observation. Chris, 7-year tribulation. Joseph, pretty sure they have nothing to worry about. Why? Because God is ultimately going to protect Israel. Beth and Tim, much of the church that is living in some of the countries surrounding Israel is right now fighting for its survival. So, yes, I think it's possible. I just wish the world and the church in particular would wake up to what radical Islamists are already doing to our brothers and sisters in Christ. Beth and Tim, important point. In other words, there is tremendous persecution of Christians already in Islamic lands. Last hour, I got a call from a man who grew up in Kuwait who identifies himself as a Christian Palestinian. And he said in the Muslim world, if you convert from Islam to Christianity, the penalty is you lose your life. Interesting. Just looking at a few other comments here. So what's your take? 866-34-TRUTH. All right. Some Jewish-related news of interest. Where to start? How about this? In Beit Shemesh, very religious Jewish community there, a growing one. Ultra-Orthodox Jews who are called Haredim. You say, what's Haredim mean? It's literally the tremblers, those who tremble. Now, it doesn't characterize what they actually do. In other words, it's not when they pray that they tremble. But Haredim, it is those who tremble at God's word. It's in Isaiah where God is looking for those who tremble at his word. That's the word that's used. So they are literally God-fearers, and they are ultra-Orthodox, the men with the long black coats and the long side curls, the women covered virtually head to toe in the ultra-Orthodox communities, which are growing in Israel and creating greater conflict with the neighboring communities, which are often secular. And, of course, they are going to have absolute law for Sabbath observance in their community. In other words, you're not going to come driving down the road in your car in their community on the Sabbath. That's not going to happen. So the Haredim, ultra-Orthodox Jews, hurled a stone at a female car driver in Beit Shemesh on Wednesday, according to YNetNews.com. Vera Daniel's windshield was smashed, but she emerged unharmed, police confirmed. The attack apparently was a response to her allegedly immodest attire. She said, my heart was pounding and all I wanted to do was get out of there. I was terrified. I had my baby with me. She told YNet News that she arrived in Beit Shemesh to purchase a stroller for her 7-month-old twins. I was opening the trunk. I was on the phone when I was pelted. Soon, actual rocks followed. I was helpless. Two religious women exited a nearby store, rushed to the car to help Danielle get her daughter out of the way, and all of them ran back to the store to take cover. So in other words, religious women, Haredi women, reached out to this woman. She said, according to her, 10 minutes later, the women helped her back to the car, and she was attempting to drive away when she was stoned once more. You can see a picture on the website, YNetNews.com, of her windshield being smashed. These were massive rocks. I held my hands up. I indicated that I was leaving, but they wouldn't stop. She further noticed that her supposedly immodest clothing was a baggy, long, black dress. She said, I knew where I was going, and I took special care not to wear anything short or tight. Did she show her shoulders, her arms? Was it low cut? I don't know. Just those would be the questions that they claim were modest. But obviously, she was trying to dress more modestly than normal, knowing where she was going. Beit Shemesh became notorious earlier this year after numerous reports began to surface about humiliation of and violence against women in the city. Earlier this month, it was reported that a local supermarket had instructed its customers to dress in a modest manner and provided them with black gowns. They subsequently removed the signs. 6 months ago, a woman was lightly hurt after being attacked in the city by dozens of Haredim, ultra-Orthodox Jews. Am I surprised? No, not in the least. Not in the least. Do I think that they will temper their responses? No. Now, they may have safeguards to keep communities more segregated, but all right, let me give you this perspective. There are friends of mine, I mean, men that I respect, men that I have civil dialogue with. It's been on the phone, it's been face-to-face, it's been my email, who are ultra-Orthodox Jews. Long black coat, black beard, the whole bit. And they absolutely renounce these types of things. They absolutely oppose them. They believe in modesty. They would not want an immodestly dressed woman, or man for that matter, but especially a woman, walking through their neighborhoods, talking about, and they live in different countries, different cities in America, but they would absolutely renounce this type of response with violence and stoning. So there are plenty of ultra-Orthodox Jews who do not agree with this approach and who do not feel it's appropriate and who do not feel it is a true reflection of Judaism. I recently met with an Orthodox rabbi, and he told me that in his mind, this type of stuff is just the Jewish equivalent of the Taliban. In other words, that this is not Judaism. This was an Orthodox rabbi. Then in his mind, this is not reflective of Judaism. This is not reflective of the spirit of Judaism, of Jewish tradition. Rather, it's the same radicalism that is found in radical Islam, the same radicalism that is found among the Taliban, the same radicalism in the Muslim world where a woman has to wear a burqa from head to toe, and you have some parts of the Muslim world where she can't even have both eyes showing through the veil. Only one can show. I mean, that's how extreme it gets. That's how extreme it gets in the name of modesty in the Islamic world. Well, there are even some Jewish traditions that, according to this Orthodox rabbi I was talking to, are parallels, and it's not the spirit of Judaism. Nonetheless, or perhaps I should say because of this, I expect to see the radical ultra-Orthodox community in Israel continue to increase in its radicalism. Now, this rabbi with whom I was speaking, this Orthodox rabbi, said that he differs with me, that my position is, this is not a hill I'm ready to die on, and I can't give you scripture for it, it's just my educated opinion, that within the land of Israel, there will be a rising tide of ultra-Orthodox radical Judaism. And it will continue to rise until it becomes fairly dominant in the culture, simply a numbers game. In other words, if the average ultra-Orthodox family has, say, 10 or 12 kids, certainly that's very common. Is it average? I've heard it's average, but it's certainly very, very common. And the average Israeli family has 2 kids or less, that just in the course of a generation, you're going to have a massive change and shift in population. And, of course, in the Muslim world, the surrounding Islamic population, they also have high birth rates, not as high as the ultra-Orthodox Jews, but they have high birth rates, which means that the secular Israelis will get squeezed out. Now, the rabbi that I was speaking with differed with me, and I'm not quoting him by name only because I don't know that he's written these things or said them publicly, so I don't know, I'm at liberty to do that. But he differed with me because he said ultimately the system is going to break down, meaning that because the ultra-Orthodox depend on state charity, that they do not work regular jobs. A small percentage do. But the greatest goal is to be studying in the yeshiva, learning as much as possible. They don't fight in the Israeli military. That the Israeli government will not be able to support it. And at a certain point, they will be forced to do things differently. And they will be forced to expand their educational curriculum. At a certain point, they will be forced to take a different stance to the military. At a certain point, they will be forced to get more regular jobs and have more regular support for their families and live, in that sense, more normal lives. We shall see. But the plot continues to thicken in Israel and the Middle East.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Do you remember earlier this year I did a lecture at University of South Florida, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? The group there in Neir Tamid, the Messianic Jewish Campus Group, tried very hard for several months to get someone to debate me. They even took out a full-page ad for 1 week in the student newspaper as graciously as possible and said, please, let's have a public dialogue. Couldn't find anyone to debate me, so I did a lecture and really put a lot of time and effort to prayerfully consider the best points to present and how to do it with PowerPoint so people could follow along with illustrations. We'll have the DVD available for purchase soon, which includes as well a Q&A section, a session of about 45 minutes. But you can watch on YouTube the lecture for free. It's available for free online. It's been posted on YouTube. And if you'd like to look at that as soon as you have an opportunity, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, and you'll see I posted it in today's comments. It's the very first comment posted with today's broadcast. It's askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire, and there's a link to the YouTube lecture, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? So what's your take? Will there be a massive war that Israel be involved in within the next 5 years? What do you think? What do you believe? In the next 5 years that Israel will be involved in an all-out war for survival, like it was involved in an all-out war for survival in 48. It was involved in an all-out war for survival in 67, in 73, will Israel be in the midst of another all-out war for survival? 866-34-TRUTH. Within the next 5 years, what's your opinion? All right. Some more news. I don't know how much you have followed this. I made passing reference to it in the first hour from Jerusalem News Online. Since Monday, close to 100 projectiles were fired into Israel from the Gaza Strip. Now, one political candidate once referred to them as somewhat like firecrackers, what to me was an unfortunate comment by Dr. Ron Paul a few years back. It's like firecrackers. That's how he likened the Hamas attack barrage from Gaza into neighboring towns in Israel, like Sderot. I don't know what his description and take would be on that today, but that's what he did say then. What are these projectiles? Well, the report continues, dozens of rockets were launched on Wednesday. The Israeli Air Force has carried out counterstrikes on Gaza 9 times since Monday. 4 people were hurt, one of them seriously, in a terror rocket strike on Tuesday night. The injured Israelis are border policemen, and the seriously injured man is an officer. 44 terrorist rockets slammed into southern Israel between midnight and 10:30 p.m. Tuesday. The incessant rocket fire placed hundreds of thousands of Israelis under siege since the beginning of the week. The Hamas terrorist group has taken responsibility for the rocket fire at the Negev. Thousands of residents were forced to remain in shelters until late Wednesday. You've got to understand the upheaval that this brings to the society, the trauma that it brings to the people, not to mention the casualties. The two terrorists who infiltrated Israel Monday were a Saudi citizen and an Egyptian belonging to a group called the Shura Council of the Mujahideen at Al-Quds. Al-Quds being the Muslim way of saying Jerusalem, the holy city. The pair appears in a video made public by the group with which they can be seen reading their final wills before launching the attack. Now check this out. According to an IDF spokesman, Israeli Defense Force spokesman, Hamas's weapon arsenal is growing with the new and advanced Iranian-made Fajr 3, Katyushas, Grads, anti-tank missiles, and heavy mortars. Over the past 6 years, Hamas rocket fire has killed 44 innocent Israeli civilians and injured a staggering 1,687 Israelis. Can you imagine, to point this out yet again, if Canada was launching rockets, Canadian terrorists launching rockets and say into northern New York State, and 1,687 people had been injured and 44 had been killed, that we just let this go on over a period of years? Now, in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood has claimed victory in the presidential election, saying that its candidate, Mohamed Morsi, won the Egyptian presidential election. He absolutely would not be in favor of an ongoing friendly relationship with Israel, nor, from my understanding, would the Egyptian military, which is vying for power, and there is concern there could be a coup after the elections. It's a volatile situation. And as I also pointed out last hour, it's especially volatile for the Coptic Christians living in Egypt. You say, well, are they all true Christians? That's not the issue. They are being persecuted because they are professing Christianity. Yes, we want them all to be true Christians who really know the Lord and not Christians in traditional name only. But they are being persecuted. Churches being burned down with people on the inside. Christians being killed in cold blood and riots in different cities. Police standing by doing nothing. This is happening to those in Egypt who have been a community there since the early times of the gospel faith. They have been a long-standing community in Israel, in Egypt. And in fact, in the 13th, 14th century, when so much of Christianity in the Muslim world was wiped out. You say, how do you mean wiped out? I mean, people just killed, slaughtered, just takeover, just mass execution and scattering. When that happened, one of the few communities that continued and that survived was the Coptic community within Egypt, which makes up, 10% of the population? It's off the top of my head. It's very volatile there, because here, just like in Iraq, that with the fall of Saddam Hussein, there has been all-out attack on those professing Christianity within Iraq. Many are true born-again Christians, many Christians in name only, but they are being attacked because they are perceived as Christian by the Muslim world, because they are not Muslims. All-out attack. My friend, Reverend Pat Mahoney, based in D.C., said that he met with the Bush administration, and they asked, before the war in Iraq, what do you have in place? What do you have in place to protect the Christian populations there in Iraq when Saddam Hussein goes down? Because as much as he was a violent, evil dictator, he still had things in place that basically protected the Christians. They had certain freedoms under Saddam Hussein in the midst of his tyrannical rule. What's going to happen now that he's taken out of power? Well, all hell's broken loose against the Christian community in Iraq. It's being decimated, tens of thousands killed, decimated by hundreds of thousands. Some have fled, some have been killed. Well, similar things could be happening in Egypt, and on a smaller level are happening since the removal of another dictator, Hosni Mubarak. We need to be praying, regardless of your views of the Middle East, regardless of your views of end time prophecy, regardless of your views of Israel, we need to be praying for God's grace to be poured out on those professing faith in his son in the Middle East, in Egypt, countries like Syria. In the midst of the persecution, the gospel can rise, the gospel can thrive, but we need to be praying for our persecuted brothers and sisters. We come back, something fascinating in the religious Jewish world.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What a joy to be with you on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Do you know there is an Islamic saying having to do with persecution of Jews and Christians? First the Saturday people, then the Sunday people. Have you heard that? When you see Islam's war against Israel, Islam's war against the Jewish people, don't think that you can separate Christians from that. Well, we don't agree with everything Israel does. Well, you know, Israel, don't think that you can make that separation. It's an Islamic saying, first the Saturday people, then the Sunday people. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. That means if you've got a Jewish-related question, I'm happy to take it. But my question for you, I've been soliciting feedback for the last hour and a half, reading some comments from Facebook, taking a few calls as well. Do you believe that Israel will be in an all-out war for survival within the next 5 years, as it was in an all-out war for survival in 1948, as it's happened a couple other times in modern Israel's history? Do you personally believe, based on what's happening in the Middle East, or based on your understanding of biblical prophecy, or just your political world outlook, or some inevitable cycles that you see, do you believe that Israel will be in an all-out war for survival within the next 5 years? What's your take? 866-348-7884. Okay. Let me focus on something really interesting in the religious Jewish world. There is something that Don Richardson, who is a missionary to unreached kind of Stone Age group. When I say Stone Age, I mean they still lived as if they were in the Stone Age in Irian Jaya, the Sawi people. He was involved in reaching out to them and wrote some famous books, Peace Child and Eternity in Their Hearts. And his theory was that there are redemptive analogies, that's the word that he used, redemptive analogies that God puts into world religion, into different cultures, so that at a certain point in history, these can be drawn on by missionaries, by those preaching the gospel, to point to things within those traditions. You say, well, where does he get that from? Well, he got it from his own experience as a missionary, things that he saw that were in the cultures of these people that enabled him to share the gospel with them. He had an analogy like, oh, you see that in your culture here. Here's the real message. He used it as an analogy. He used it as a bridge. For example, when he couldn't communicate with these people, he learned enough of their language, moved there with his wife and baby and living in the midst of people that, you know, naked and you know, bones through the noses, the whole bit. He learns their language, finally learns enough to share the gospel with them, shares the gospel with them. And when he gets to the punchline and the crucifixion, and they're howling with laughter because Judas was their hero. Jesus was the poor victim in the story, but Judas was the hero because their culture had this tremendous value put on deceit. You fatten someone for the kill, get them to think that you're friends, get them at ease, and then kill them. Judas was the hero. Jesus was almost the villain because he didn't see it coming. He thought, no, what am I going to do now? Well, he discovered as the tribes were warring, the tribes were always at war, that some point to make peace, they took the son of a tribal leader against the family. You know, the family's screaming and crying over this, but takes the son of a tribal leader and gives that son to the other tribe and to be raised by that tribe, and that would bring peace, and that was called the Peace Child. And he said, wait a second, that's it. God sent Jesus as the Peace Child. And when they got that analogy, boom, it worked for them, and they started coming to faith in Jesus, the Savior, and the Messiah. There are other missiologists and scholars who dispute the redemptive analogy issue. I personally believe it to be true. I can't verify all the stories Don Richardson speaks of, but if it's true anywhere, it's true in Judaism, because so much of Judaism is drawn from the Scripture. So I want to tell you about something really interesting happening in the very religious Jewish community.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. It's not the main focus of what we're talking about today, but just curious to get your take. Do you believe that Israel will be in an all-out war for its own survival in the next 5 years? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Okay, and I'll read some comments that have come in and take some calls on that as well. Redemptive analogies, truths that God has placed in other religions, in other cultures and societies, so that when the gospel is revealed, people will have that truth planted there. Don Richardson, the missionary and seminary professor, pointed to passages like Ecclesiastes 3, that God has put eternity in people's hearts. Eternity in their hearts. In other words, that there are certain universal truths that God has planted in hearts, and that through them, the gospel can be more readily received when it is brought. You could argue that based on Romans 1 as well. Well, without question, it exists in Judaism. Without question, there are teachings in Judaism that very much are in harmony with gospel revelation. Why? Well, on the one hand, much of Judaism is based on the Bible, the Hebrew Scriptures, what Christians call the Old Testament. So because of that, there are going to be many, many insights that are truths that are planted within Judaism just based on the Scriptures. And when God makes them alive and says, yeah, this that you're looking at in the Scripture and in Jewish tradition, that actually points to Jesus, Yeshua. Oh, the light will go on. One of the major ones we talk about is the atoning power of the death of the righteous. In fact, do you have The Real Kosher Jesus yet? Do you have my latest book yet? My latest physical book, we published an ebook since then. You don't? Are you serious? Come on. You're telling me since the book came out in April that you haven't spent $15 that you could have spent somewhere else, that was discretionary, and you could have got my book and you didn't, or $25 for the hardcover. Okay, enough with the guilt trip. Sorry for the Jewish guilt trip there. If you have the book, you know this, that the last third of the book is devoted to the secrets, revealing the secrets of the hidden Messiah, and open this up to the Jewish and Christian audience alike. If you don't have the book, you'll find it fascinating. So order it, The Real Kosher Jesus. So I have a whole chapter on the atoning power of the death of the righteous. This is something known within Jewish tradition, the atoning power of the death of the righteous. And we show how ultimately this truth applies to Jesus, Yeshua, the Messiah. It was an outreach lecture I did at Hebrew University last year on that very subject, or a year and a half ago, on the atoning power of the death of the righteous. Well, there are followers of the late Grand Rabbi, the Rebbe, as he's called, of the Hasidic group called the Lubavitchers. They are best known because of their outward stance to reach out in public ways to other Jews. You can see them in streets of New York City approaching men walking by, Mr., are you Jewish? And asking if they'll pull on tefillin, the phylacteries, the prayer boxes. Will they pray that? Just believing that it'll spark something in their Jewish soul. A Jewish woman, you're lighting the candles for the Sabbath, believing if she does that, it'll spark something in her Jewish soul. So they do a lot of outreach to Jews to try to bring Jews to Jewish tradition. And this came from their leader, who was a great genius, a great leader of the Lubavitchers, Menachem Mendel Schneerson. He died in 1994 at the age of 92. Many of his followers believe that he was the Messiah. Many believe that he didn't really die physically. That was just a test to see if they would still believe in him. Others said he did die physically, but he would rise from the dead. Others said that he would return. Sound familiar? And others actually declared that he was divine. Now, I get into this in my book, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, Volume 2. And then I have a section in The Real Kosher Jesus about the secret of the invisible God who can be seen. Now, it is only a tiny group within Lubavitch today, some would say extreme fringe, that hold to this. Others would say it's more common than you know. And that is the view that the Grand Rabbi of Lubavitch, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, hailed, if not as Messiah by his devoted followers, hailed at least as this most significant Jewish leader of the 20th century and someone who could have been a messianic candidate, so revered by his followers. There are some who actually believe that he was God incarnate. As Rabbi Dan Cohn-Sherbach observes, some followers of the Rebbe have even gone so far as to use incarnational terminology in describing his mission. During his lifetime, the Rebbe was referred to as the essence of the infinite. Today, some Lubavitcher Hasidim, so some of his followers, talk of him as master of the universe. There are some who believe that you can pray towards his picture. Now, I'm bringing this up because, as I understand, I didn't see the posters myself, but posters by one of the Rebbe's followers were put up recently in a community in Israel again, not just announcing him as Messiah. You see that everywhere. You see giant posters with his face all over Israel. You see it when you fly into Israel and arrive there, the major airport, Ben Gurion Airport, you'll find, at least last time I was there, the giant posters, billboards, announcing him as the Messiah and blessing him and welcoming him as the Messiah with his picture. So this is, again, 18 years after his death. But there are some who are even proclaiming that he was the essence of the infinite, that he was somehow God incarnate. And they're arguing that every righteous Jew has a certain spark of the divinity, but he had something more than that. So in response to this, a real opponent then of the Lubavitcher Rebbe and of the Lubavitcher Hasidim, Rav Eliezer Shach, who died, I don't know, he was well past 100 years old when he died and active really right towards the end. His followers posted a large billboard in Hebrew, this is a few years back now, responding to the claims of some of the followers of Rabbi Schneerson. A shocking revelation. In the words of Chabad, the Lubavitchers themselves, the Rebbe is the Messiah and even the creator of the world himself. As described by Professor Samuel Heilman, beneath these words was produced the masthead of the Lubavitcher newsletter. And the following paragraph from an article in it, circled and enlarged, the Messiah, at the time of redemption, will be revealed to all people to be made not of flesh and blood, not even flesh and blood like our great teacher Moses, but rather to be the Holy One, blessed be he himself. Juxtaposed to this was another quotation, soon indeed his holiness, our master, teacher, and rabbi, may he live for many good days. Amen. The King, the Messiah, in all his glory and grandeur will reveal himself. And the poster continues with the Lubavitcher saying that their rabbi was the Messiah, even God himself. Heilman continues, careful readers would see in the Hebrew letters for indeed, English mamash, the initials of the Lubavitcher Rebbe's name. To opponents like Rabbi Shach, even this was appalling. This pains us very much, the poster concluded in giant letters, but we cannot close our eyes to the fact. What's the point of this? Why am I sharing this? I'm sharing this to say, as outrageous as this claim seems in the traditional Jewish world, as outrageous as it is to opponents of the Rebbe, the fact is that even this concept, no, it's not the same concept that we would refer to as the incarnation, but it's a parallel on some level. Even this concept being introduced among religious Jews provides a platform for us to talk to some of these same religious Jews and say, you're going in the right direction, but you're missing the real point. You're going in the right direction, but you're missing the real point. It is a bridge. Listen, I am absolutely convinced that just as there is a noticeable rise around the world in the numbers of ultra-Orthodox Jews because of birth rate and because of even secular Jews becoming religious. Yes, many start and then turn away, but many stick. And then the birth rate is very high and the tradition is very strong and the sense of identity, solidarity, very deep. Just as there is a rise worldwide in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community, I am absolutely convinced that behind the scenes, here and there and here and there, there is a growing, rising tide of ultra-Orthodox Jews believing in Jesus Yeshua, Anecdotally, I hear about them here and there. I get to meet some of the people. I get to hear some of their stories. Some of them reach out to us. But I also sense it in my spirit, and I believe that scripturally it will happen. And I wanted to share that with you as this is in the news again in Israel, as this is again taking place, people making this proclamation. As much as it's rejected, to me it's just another reminder that things that seem unbelievable and preposterous in many Jewish eyes, that there will actually be Jewish sources, Jewish texts that are used to help open up Jewish eyes. All right, come back with your take on the question, will Israel be in an all-out war for survival in the next 5 years?
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire broadcast. Let me read some responses to my question. Do you believe that Israel will be in an all-out war for survival within the next 5 years? Scary thought, but only a matter of time. Most likely, yes. 5 to 10 years. That's from Mike. Ari, yes. Michael Brown, what do you believe? I was asking the question, Ari. I was asking the question today. James Michael, not unless war hawk rhetoric and military fundamentalism prevail over godly sanity and the desires of everyone who's not on the extreme of either side, I pray for peace and reconciliation. Constance, yes, sir. Maybe this year. I hope not. Praying. Yes, from your own, but I hope not. James, yes, I may have it wrong, but I'm still looking for the scary and very sad day when Zechariah 14 comes to complete fulfillment. I pray for the peace of Jerusalem every day. It's interesting. Some say insufficient data, like David. Deborah says no. But it's interesting how many seem strongly convinced that the answer is yes. Now, I'm looking at a comment from Frank, who, with his wife, they're grads from a ministry school and serve in Israel. He says, not a doubt in my mind. With Egypt now under the Muslim Brotherhood control, with Lebanon having 50,000 rockets aimed at Israel, with Hamas firing rockets into Israel daily, with Iran making nukes, and with Syria contemplating starting a war with Israel just to get the world off Assad's back, war is just a matter of time. That's a perspective from within Israel. All right, let me grab a few calls quickly. Vic in Denver, Colorado. What's your take, sir?
Yeah, Dr. Brown, the way things are looking, I think it's pretty imminent, inevitable, I think. I hate to sound so gloomy, but with all
that's all right.
On,
do you see Israel coming out of this unscathed, or what's your take?
I think that the Lord will carry the day for Israel. I don't think they'll come out unscathed, though. No, and I'm open. But if something happens, we'll not hesitate to rush to Israel.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, though, Vic, is that many Christians say, hey, God will protect Israel and no reason to fear. Well, just remember that the 2/3 of European Jews perished in the Holocaust, that as many as 1 million Jews perished in the war against Rome in the first century, and then hundreds of thousands more in the second war against Rome in the second century of this era. That, say, the Yom Kippur War in 1973 in Israel, or just the War of Independence 1948 when 5 surrounding Arab nations attacked Israel, there are a lot of Jewish casualties. There have been a lot of Jewish casualties to terrorist attacks. So, yeah, I'm with you on that, Vic. Whatever war there is, it's still costly. There's still loss of human life, Arab life, and Jewish life. And if there is war, even if, yes, God protects Israel through it, carries Israel through it, which I would ultimately see happening. I'm with you on saying that Israel will not be unscathed. Hey, thank you, sir, for the call. And I think Vic reflects the sympathies of others. Sorry, I didn't get to other callers on this subject in the last half hour. My apologies. But what's my take? Honestly, I have really mixed feelings. The big issue to me is not even Egypt, although that could be massive, not even Syria, instability there. The big issue to me is Iran. The big issue is, will Israel go to war against Iran because of its nuclear capabilities? Will Iran attack Israel? These are open questions. I do not know. I've thought about these. I don't see any clear indication from Scripture that would enable me to set dates and times, just to be flat out honest with you. Early next month, plan to have Joel Richardson on the air with me. And Joel's author of The Mideast Beast. He'll give the case for an Islamic Antichrist. He may have some views about this. But as I read Scripture, as I look at world events, I am personally not able to put time frames on things specific enough for me to say Israel will be in the midst of an all-out war for survival within the next 5 years. But I could easily see it happening. I could easily see it happening primarily because of the volatility with Iran. What should we be praying? Just praying for peace? The best thing is to pray for God's best purposes for Israel and all the surrounding nations. God, your will be done in the Middle East. Lord, your kingdom come. May people's hearts be turned to you. Others say it's wise to pray against Satan prematurely provoking some war that would cost many, many lives and bring much destruction with it. And it is in that sense before its time. But certainly we need to be praying. We need to be praying for the protection of believers. We need to be praying. We should be praying in advance for the religious Jews that will be coming out of the closet and professing their faith, because it's going to be very costly, as religious Jews begin to come out of the closet and say, I am a follower of Jesus, Yeshua. We should be praying for them. We should be praying for secret believers in the Islamic communities, in the Islamic world, and secret believers in the religious Jewish world, and that God would give them wisdom and courage when it's time to stand publicly. We should be praying for that now. I believe there is a coming harvest. We need to be praying for their discipleship. We need to be praying for places where they can be helped and where they can grow in the Lord. Here and there, we're in touch with some of them, and I can't wait to see what God is going to do. Oh, got this note from John, Dr. Brown. Your book, The Real Kosher Jesus, was the best one yet. I sent one to my dad, and I'll have to buy a few more copies. I gave my copy away to Pastor Michael in Denver, who's also been enjoying this book. I've learned a tremendous amount of the greatest rabbi of all time from your book. That would be Jesus, Yeshua. Thanks for that good word, John. If you don't have a copy yet of The Real Kosher Jesus, be sure to order it. Okay, the lecture that I gave at University of South Florida earlier this year is Israel an Evil Occupier. We'll have the DVD available soon with the intro from the leader of the local Messianic Jewish group that sponsored the event, the entire lecture, and the Q&A. But it's on YouTube now. And you can watch it absolutely free, and you could recommend it to your friends. I think you'll find it really enlightening. So when you have the opportunity, just go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, and you'll see in the comments section I have added that link so you can watch it on YouTube. Also, I think you'd all agree with me that knowing the will of God for our lives is very important. The biggest question, is there a God? The second question, how am I to relate to him? Third question, what does he want from me? How am I to live? What's his will? The most practical teaching I've ever done on this, how to find the mind, the heart of God, how to be led by the Spirit. The best practical teaching I've ever done on this, 12 hours, it's 8 lectures, simple, clear, and thoroughly scripturally based. It's only $20 plus postage, which is a great deal. Today, $10 postage paid. We'll send it to you. This is to listen to now on your computer or your MP3 player. $10 postage paid. Take advantage of the special offer. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Or just go to AskDrBrown.org and click on the online bookstore. My bottom line today: there's much we can speculate about in the Middle East. There's much we can speculate about in the Muslim world. But this much we know: God sent his son to save Jew and Arab alike. And it is time for their redemption.